And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletic's Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and joining you as we do twice a week here on The Athletic, where if you want to subscribe to The Athletic, you should go to theathletic.com/spinrate. Let them know we sent you. We do this show twice a week. That you should subscribe to that wherever you get your podcast: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podcatcher, Podfeed, Podbean, whatever. Do it. This is the spiel. Get it out of the way early so we can get right to the meat. Me and former Blue Jays All-Star Ricky Romero, who joins me as he does every week at this time. Ricky, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. Looking forward to this series coming up with the Jays and the Yankees, two teams that have been struggling, and they're coming off some I guess you would call it some emotional wins last night. And it's going to be another important series for the Jays. And you hope that they can continue to gain some ground. And hopefully that win yesterday kind of put them back on their feet.
It's if you're a Blue Jays fan, it's been a real shame that they have slumped so badly at this time when the Yankees have been slumping as well. Number one, I think it's important to remember that it happens to everybody, even a team that looked like they could not be beaten, as the Yankees did for the first 70, 80, 90 games of the year. But the Blue Jays have slumped. They haven't gained as much ground to the Yankees as they would have liked. They've lost some ground in the wild card race, but here they are facing head to head with the New York Yankees. And as you mentioned, the Blue Jays, of course, came off when we were recording this on Thursday morning, morning for you. a big win, 6-1 win over Baltimore. Much needed, desperately needed win to right the ship a little bit after losing the first two against Baltimore. Lots to talk about in the aftermath of those two games. The Yankees, of course, with a very emotional win, roller coaster ride, fall behind early to the Tampa Bay Rays, come all the way back, give up three runs in the top of the ninth inning, only to see Josh Donaldson, the much maligned and author of not a great season. Yankees fans not really too excited about having Josh Donaldson in the mix these days. And yet there he was, walk-off grand slam. Just like you practice in the backyard when you're throwing pitches to yourself or throwing them off the back of the wall, whatever. Walk off grand slam, opposite way, Yankees pick up an enormous 8-7 win over the dreaded Tampa Bay Rays, which in its own way helps the Blue Jays a little bit, as the Blue Jays and Rays are among those teams battling it out for the wild card. But let's talk a little bit about what came out of that Orioles series. A few things that came out of it, come out of the rotation. Yusei Kikuchi is not going to be pitching in the rotation in the immediate future, as he's been moved to the bullpen with Mitch White being given the next start for the Toronto Blue Jays, with Kikuchi hoping to get right in the bullpen. My plan of Japanese Andrew Miller, well on its way, but big vote. That's what I believe. That's what I need to believe. It's what I'm telling myself in my soul. Japanese.
Hey, you're a positive guy, man. You're a very positive guy. I like that.
Andrew Miller was the best at strike to balls, right? Getting people to swing at balls and get people to take strikes. Yusei Kikuchi, everything looks like a ball. So he's already halfway there. He's already well on the way. Got the velo. Get the slider, just simplify it right down. One thing that would really help if Yusei Kikuchi could grow like a good 6 or 7 inches. Andrew Miller, of course, a very, very tall and imposing figure.
And throw across his body.
Throw across his body, be really weird long legs like Dustin May. But like also Andrew Miller, I think we talked about this when he retired. Andrew Miller in the trenches all winter long, in the labor dispute, fighting on behalf of his position as the head of the Players Association. Then they get the deal done and he retires. Not the head of the Players Association, that's Max Scherzer actually, but Andrew Miller like took a very very front forward facing, you know, hardline, you know, guy in that negotiation and then retired, which I think is super cool. That's such an admirable position for him to have taken that and done the right thing for the state of the game, for the players, for the union, for all of hopefully for the betterment of the product as well, for the fans. So shout out to Andrew Miller. Shout out to Yusei Kikuchi. You got it in you, Yusei Kikuchi. But we won't talk about him right away. One thing we should talk about is Ross Stripling, who made his return to the rotation and looked like $1 million. John Schneider, the first millennial manager in the history of the Blue Jays, dropping the Bob Ross reference on the world, talking about him painting. There's not much else. I think you can't ask Ross Stripling to do anything more than he's already done this season. What a job. There was a lot of talk on, you know, the kind of talk radio saying, oh, the Blue Jays only have two starters you can trust. If you're in a playoff series, who's going to get game three? You know, it's obviously disappointing to see what's going on with Jose Berríos this year, but like Ross Stripling is that guy, right? You can't take that opportunity away from him, given how well he's pitched as a starter, given the work that the job that he's done, and given the results that he's produced on the field. You need someone to get outs. You need someone to start a game and give you a good outing. There's no reason to believe it can't be Ross Stripling starting today.
100%. And what I love about watching him pitch is the efficiency, how effective he is. It's not going out there and I'm going to blow your tires out. It's I'm going to go out there and pitch. And his changeup is a thing of beauty, Drew. When you watch it in slow motion, and I know I think the pitching ninja, I believe, had his has his little slow motion camera on his changeup, how it comes out of his hand. And just, again, you can't say enough about him. It's like he's been the savior to this rotation, this mighty rotation that wasn't expecting Ross Stripling to be a part of it. But he's grabbed the bull by the horns and said, you know what? Hop on. Like, I'm just as good as anybody. And you're right. I mean, if the season ended today and you needed your top three starters, you almost can't leave Ross Stripling out. It's, you know, you go Manoah, Gausman, and then Ross Stripling has made a case for it. And that, you know, and Berríos hasn't been the pitcher that we thought he was going to be, and right now he's struggling. So in a three game series, he'd be hard to trust. And go ahead.
No, please go ahead, please.
No, and I was just going to say, I just love how efficient he's been and the effectiveness of it, and how he's going out there and just attacking guys. And obviously, a perfect game is something that you dream of as a pitcher, and the fact that you take it into a seventh inning on your first start back from the IL. And you do it with such ease. Just told me, like, this guy is ready. He's a staple in this rotation right now. Right now, he's a staple in this rotation. He's part of your top three guys. And again, credit to him, because it's not easy to make a move from the bullpen to a starting job and then make it look so easy. And one, he's a veteran. He understands his role, and good for him. I feel like I've said that before about him, but I just love how effective he is, man, and I'll continue to say that word. It's just it's awesome when you're watching him work fast, that you know, and you're putting up zeros, you're giving the team a chance to win, and next thing you know, boom, the offense finally breaks through with one run, and then they have a big inning, and it just starts getting contagious. And I feel like sometimes that's what you need. That's why I always say, as a starting pitcher, you set the tone for your team. You set everything that kind of goes ahead. Now, if you lose 1-0, who cares? I mean, that's just part of the game. But when you're setting the tone and your teammates are seeing that you're going out there and you're battling and you're putting up zeros, they wanna start hitting for you. And it almost, you know, that, what was it, in the seventh inning, eighth inning, it almost seems like things just started rolling for them. And it's like, oh, these are the Blue Jays that we're accustomed to seeing. This is the lineup that we're accustomed to seeing. Santiago Espinal at the bottom of the lineup, you know, getting things started. You know, obviously, I don't know if I'm sure we're going to get into it. I think I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but it just became contagious.
Absolutely. The offense, like, when you see it get right, and it doesn't have to be home runs, right? They put you in a tough spot, right? With the bases are loaded. And then okay, you got through Vlad, and now you've got Alejandro Kirk, who's in a bit of a slump and hasn't had an extra base hit in a while, but then he's able to come through with a double, scores a whole bunch of runs, right? And then I think the other thing you see is as this Blue Jays team has become a little bit more athletic, you know, over the season and with some really good base running, you score all three. It makes a huge difference. The one thing I was thinking too, so the three pitchers that we're kind of talking about right now, we're talking about Yusei Kikuchi, talking about Jose Berríos, and we're talking about Ross Stripling. Baseball terminology that I think might trip people up sometimes is the difference between command and control. And I think when you look at Stripling and you look at Kikuchi and you look at Berríos, that's the great example of all three of those pieces, right? I've said this time and time again. Jose Berríos this year doesn't have command because he's throwing his pitches, his fastball in particular, for strikes, but it's in the zone so often. And to the point where he's missing, but he's not missing with his spot. He's not missing the zone. He's missing his spot. But instead of being off the plate, it's over the plate. And I think I heard, it might've been Arden or someone talking about, or it was Chris Black talking about in his last time out, it looked like Berríos was throwing his fastball out of the zone on purpose, almost trying to induce swing and misses based on what he's been doing, which is missing the wrong way and leaving stuff over the plate. So Berríos doesn't really walk a lot of people, but his command isn't there because those pitchers aren't just not going where he needs them to go. They're going to the worst case scenario, often right down the middle of the plate. They're supposed to be down. They end up or just elevated. Kikuchi's the opposite. Kikuchi has no control. They're all over the place. He's throwing it here, there, and everywhere, falling behind. And then he's trying to sneak sliders past people for strikes, trying not to walk them, just trying to do anything to get a strike. And then he leaves a slider over the middle of the plate. And the next thing you know, it's over the fence, right? Where we saw him just giving home runs. But Ross Stripling, who doesn't have as good of stuff as either of those two guys, stuff matters. Like you're never going to get me to be one of those guys who's like, you know, it doesn't matter if you throw it 100 miles an hour. It does. It really does. If you throw 100 miles an hour, you have a lot more margin for error. And if you have a breaking ball that's 90 or above, it doesn't even have to be a good one oftentimes. But Ross Stripling has that beautiful changeup, as you said. He's able to throw his curveball for strikes, his fastball. You know, as we've talked about a million times, it's not like the old days where he's throwing it up there 88, 89. Like Ross Stripling throws hard. His fastball, average fastball is like 92. But it's when those pitchers are thrown in the right spots to make it difficult to do damage. And they're thrown into spots that allows each of those other pitches to play up. Because if he can throw the fastball down and away to a left-handed hitter, then they're worried about it. And then the changeup is just so much more of an effective pitch out there. Because he can get them to swing and miss when it dives off the table.
Yeah, no, I think that's a perfect explanation of what you just said right there of the three of them. And to me, obviously, Kikuchi is a guy that I always say he's trying to trick everyone. And I'm like, dude, don't try and trick anybody. Just go out there. He's trying to throw that 3-2 slider. And it's almost like it's every time, and every time it gets waffled for a home run. it seems like it always happens when he shakes from a fastball to, you know, it's a slider 3-2, and then boom, it gets hit. And it's almost like he's like thinking so much because he's like, how can I trick these guys? How can I get an out? When it's like, hey, I need to trust my stuff. It's plenty good enough. All right. That's been said and done. Berríos, to me, like you said, it's a guy that he lives in the zone a little bit too long. And when you live in the middle, in the heart of the plate, in the big leagues, stuff like that is going to happen. What's happened to him this season? Because when we've seen him at his best, he locates that fastball and then he throws that wiping curveball or slider. I never could tell. I feel like he throws both sometimes, or he throws one slower than the other. But
he feels like he can shape it a lot, right? He needs it to be a bit more sharp, or throw it for a strike, or throw it for a swing and miss. He definitely plays with it a lot.
Because this ball sinks so much sometimes, but you're right. Sometimes it just gets a little flat in the zone. But when he's got that good sinker and that good slider curveball going to both sides of the plate, and he's splitting the plate in half, as we call it, that's when you see him at his best. And sometimes when he doesn't split the plate in half and he lives a little bit up in the zone, then, you know, we see the results that we saw last outing. And then you mentioned Stripling. Stripling's a guy that's going to go out there and he's going to split the plate. And he's going to say, here's my best stuff, hit it. Here's my best stuff, hit it. And you saw it yesterday. And again, he's a guy that works at a good tempo and is very efficient. I think with Berríos, sometimes his tempo kind of lacks And it's just like, he's not a guy that, boom, I'm going to get the ball and I'm going to get on the mound and I'm going to trust my stuff. With him, it's almost like he's not trusting it. He throws a pitch and it's almost like, how can I make it better? And you can just start seeing the wheel spin a little bit. And where, you know, Stripling is obviously, you know, veteran guy. He knows what he wants to do. He knows his game, which is the most important part. He knows his game. He knows what he wants to do to hitters. So that to me is a big part of his success.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate. But first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think the Kikuchi piece is interesting to me because, yeah, we talk about him going to a slider 3-2 when he throws so hard and he's got such an effective fastball. But there's that, A, trust your stuff, but also you have to be able to trust yourself to throw for a strike. If he's mm-hmm. like, I don't know if I can get this over the plate, or if I'm, as you said, splitting the plate in half and I'm working on the outside half with this fastball, but I don't know if I can get it there and I don't want to walk him. So mm-hmm. I feel like I can throw, if he feels like he can throw a strike with the slider, so then he goes to it, but that it's like, it is a strike in that it has split the plate in two, the pitch, in that it's in the very center, and then it gets hard. And then Barrios, again, those misses are, there's two things about Barrios. When he pitched against Cleveland, he gave up a couple home runs. One was against Josh Naylor, mm-hmm. and it was a fastball, and it was up in the zone. And I shared the clip on Twitter, and I was like, this isn't even that bad a pitch.
Yeah.
Which it's true, because it wasn't. But it's a bad pitch against that hitter because that's where he really likes to live. Josh Naylor is not like a lot of left-handed hitters. He lives up in the zone. His hot zones are at the top. So a fastball that's up there that he can drive out to left field or left center field, that's not where you want to throw that pitch to him. And mm-hmm. that's exactly what happened. And I don't think that was the target. I don't think they would have said, let's throw this up there, because they never would have called that. They never would have said, let's throw it into this guy's nitro zone and give him the opportunity to get his arms extended and do what he does, hit the ball out to right field. So again, that's one of those things where it's like, he's just missing with his fastball in all the worst places. But the thing that was really interesting to me was the home run that he hit. He gave up to Jose Ramirez, which was a changeup that was like below the zone. That you 100% got to tip your cap to Jose Ramirez, who's one of the best players in baseball and has been for the better part of a decade. But there's a big part of me that thinks that Jose Barrios is tipping his pitches still, or is tipping his pitches. Like, they know, I don't know how you can sit there and sit back on a changeup and pick it off the ground like that unless you were either sitting on it or knowing it was coming. Yeah. Now, that's a really hard thing to nail down, especially if you're not in the dugout and you're not, you know, those guys are having conversations and I'm not having, and they see stuff that would never be able to see on TV. But that kind of swing on that kind of pitch is one of the things that's like, man, is he tipping? Like, they got to know something about what's coming. But then, of course, it could be about his pitch selection and just the way that he's gone. And if he's like, it doesn't matter physically what you're doing, I know you're going to throw a changeup here because you've done it four times in the last time through the order, because it's the only thing you know that works.
That's exactly what I was going to get to. Maybe it's the pitch selection. Maybe mm-hmm. Ramirez is like, you know what? Every time he has me on this count, he tries to bury that changeup. I'm going to try and see it out of the hand and keep that bat in that swing path long enough to where I can flick the wrist and hit it out, which, like you said, I saw your tweet and I was like, man, how the hell did he hit that? That's one of those things where, as a starting pitcher or as a pitcher in general, you threw the pitch, it felt good out of your hand, and you're like, you look back and you're like, are you kidding me? Like, but Drew, it's one of those things again where you start thinking, you come back to the dugout and you're like, was I tipping a pitch? Was I doing this? Was I doing that? What did I do there? What did I? And you start questioning. And that to me is the recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. Because Berrios, I'm sure, came back and he has all these thoughts in his head. What's going on? How did he do that? Do they have a sign? Did somebody say something? Somebody whistled? Did somebody did? And you start thinking that you forget about 60 feet, 6 inches. You forget about making quality pitches. Now you're thinking like, oh my God, I better cover my glove. I better cover the ball. Maybe something they saw something different. Maybe I'm fanning my glove. I'm opening or I'm closing it on certain pitches. And that when it takes away from what you're trying to do to a hitter, then you're fucked. It don't matter. And I feel like that's where Berrios has been all season, where he has scuffled so bad at times that when he does scuffle, it's like the questioning begins, like, you know, what am I doing and what can I do to fix it? And that's why I don't think we've seen a consistent Jose Berrios. I was texting with somebody and I said, man, coming into the season, I never thought Berrios was the last of my concerns as far as consistency, because the track record that he came with was he's consistent. He's going to give you innings and he's going to keep you in the game. And I wasn't worried about that part. And maybe I jinxed him because I picked him to be in the top three in Cy Young this season.
You're not alone. You're absolutely not alone in that.
But that's the track record he came with, right? I mean, he's a guy that when they made the trade for him last season and he kind of got off to a slow start with the Jays and then he finished strong, you're like, wow, okay, if this guy can continue this into this season and be the staff ace and everyone can just kind of fall into place with the Gausman, Manoa, and stuff like that, there wasn't a worry. But right now, obviously, there's a reason to worry, and he hasn't been as consistent as we've seen him in his past. So you hope that he catches fire, man. I mean, again, he's not a guy he's not Kikuchi where they're going to yank him out of the rotation and send him to the pen. He's going to be a guy that, hey man, like if they get him on a hot roll, he's a huge, huge asset to the rotation, obviously.
I feel like the Blue Jays, when you look at the way they spent their money in the last few years, right? They signed guys like Hyunjin Ryu and George Springer as free agents, where there are maybe some red flags about those guys. And so that the Blue Jays, who typically haven't been like the highest or the first choice free agent destination, they're able to go in there and kind of make an aggressive move for a guy that other teams might be a little bit unsure about. Hyunjin Ryu, there's obviously health concerns. He's a guy who's battled injuries a lot through his career, was great. Deal hasn't worked out because 2020 was cut down so short, and then he was fine in 2021, and then 2022 kind of went sideways. Springer, same sort of thing. Great player, guy who's been hurt, but the Blue Jays committed and made that move. Berrios was the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was they got a good look at him. As you said, they brought him in. He pitched well. He worked with the team. He took to that instruction. He worked with Matt Bushman and Pete Walker and all those guys and became in the last half of his time in 2021 in Toronto, really, really effective to the point that the Blue Jays threw a whole pile of money at him. I don't think they were doing that for fun. They didn't do that. They didn't quote unquote need to do it. He still would have been under contract this year if they hadn't done that. So I think that what we've seen this year, and as you said, they're not going to pull him from the rotation. I think what we're seeing is him still working, right? Still being in there and trying to work and get to figure it out and go out there. And even though he's been having a tough year and guys are hitting him, still taking the ball every fifth day, still taking the ball, still going out there being like, what am I going to do today to give my team a chance to win? And that's the sort of thing where maybe, you know, another guy, or if they hadn't done that contract, maybe he's less likely to do that. Maybe he's going to try to protect his reputation a little bit or be like, oh, I was hurt. Go on the injured list, whatever. So I think it's, I don't know if admirable. It's you never like to see someone going out there getting their brains beat in like that, right? But the fact that he's taking the ball every fifth day, the fact that he's doing all that work and working with the team in between starts, you just hope that he can figure it out. And if he is hurt, if there is like a knee thing or something, again, I saw somebody not speculate that was what's going on, but like almost hope, like, oh, he's got some loose bodies in his knee and maybe he gets it cleaned up and he comes back in the spring and he's good to go. But he can and should be a big and important part of the team. So hopefully they can get him figured out, and he can get himself in a position where he can just go out there and pitch, feel good about all four of his pitches, or at least the top three offerings. And he can go out there and just be the guy that he can be, because as great it is that Stripling step forward, as great as Gossman has been, you know, there still are some questions about Alek Manoah. I don't know. We don't want to spend too much time, but are you concerned at all about Alek Manoah's workload at this point and sort of how he's kind of been getting hit around a little bit throughout the season?
I just think he's in uncharted territory, right? I mean, mm-hmm. he's a young guy that's never, I mean, I think he's already way past his innings pitch ever in his career. Mm-hmm. And you have to sit there and wonder, like, okay, like, it's fatigue going to set in for him? But he's come out and said that he's going to be just fine. And you have to trust him for that. I mean, again, he's put himself in this position to be able to say, hey, maybe I guess he's not in a position. I guess there's no position because they're in the middle of a playoff race. I was going to say, if they were like the Yankees were, you know, they're 10 games up on in the wild card, then you can be like, hey, man, maybe we'll skip you and just kind of regroup a little bit and stuff like that. But there is no regrouping right now. You got to just go. And I don't see a concern. Again, I look at his last start and he keeps his team in the game, man. I mean, you know, obviously it's not the, we weren't going to see him dominate the way he dominated the first half, where it was like, you know, 6-7-8 shut piece. You mentioned earlier in the show about the teams, like you knew that what the Yankees were doing was not going to be sustainable. Everyone hits it. Well, as a player, it's the same thing. It's very rare that you're able to sustain the same consistency all season. You're going to hit a little bit of a wall. But I think as far as being concerned, I don't think so. I think he's got the right mentality. He's got the right approach when he's out there, and he's a guy that the team feeds off of when he's on the mound. So I don't think you can take that away as far, like, I don't think it's going to be a situation where it was like, who was the team? Was it Steven Strasburg a few years with the Nationals?
In 2012, I think that was.
Where they were saying, like,
they shut him down. Yeah.
Yeah. That's our future. Boom. We're not, I don't think the Blue Jays would ever do that again. And I think Manoah would kill somebody.
Who's going to be the one that's going to tell him that? Alec, we're sitting you down. Like, sorry, fellas, that's not going to happen.
So, no, I'm not concerned. Again, you wish there was a big enough lead to make where maybe you can, like, skip guy and be like, all right, let's just kind of back, like, this the workload, let's just kind of give you a week's rest and just see where it goes, just to get you ready for the playoffs. But right now they're in the playoffs already. And again, and it's one of those things where I'm not worried about him and his velocity. It's not like his velocity's down or anything like that. It's just one of those things where teams have gotten to see him more and he's going to have to make those adjustments. I always said the more teams saw me, the more I have to adjust to them. Yes. A certain game plan might work, you know, the first half of the season, but when they see you again, they've adjusted to you. The hitters are now, some of the hitters are seeing the ball better than they were earlier in the season. So now what kind of adjustment can I make against the hitter that's making the adjustments that, you know, where I dominated him in April? Like, now it's a little bit different. So it's that cat and mouse game that I think Manoah can play, obviously, and he's going to be just fine. I mean, I'm not worried about him. I think come playoff time, I'm not even going to say if they get there, when they get there, it's going to be one of those things where he feeds off the energy of the crowd, and you're going to see the best you. I think the best is yet to come with Alek Manoah.
I just love to see him. He's just such a battler, right? Like, I just really admire that on the mound, especially for a young guy. You know, he's definitely not the guy who you see kind of peeking over to the dugout in the fifth inning and he's like, all right, boys, let's, like, you can get me out of here now. Like, I'm good. He is just out there trying to do everything he can. And that, when, you know, when it works, or when he's keeping his team in the game, it's so huge, because he's just like, I've said 1,000 times, oh, okay, this isn't working. And he pulls that, he might lose that pitch for a time or two or a couple batters and sort of bring it out and just really try and do everything that he can to put his team in a position to win. And then, of course, Kevin Gossman, of course, who is, man, he's really good. Kevin Gossman is just such a monster. You and I haven't spoken since last. He was undone by his defense, which is exactly what happened. But you know, Kevin Gausman's a guy who's just had a lot of bad luck happen to him this year, but just such a great pitcher. So great to watch him work, because he's really something. That's a tidy signing. You gotta love Kevin Gausman.
He's been consistent, man. I mean, another guy that'll take the ball and he's gonna go out there and grind and give you quality innings, quality starts, and you know, not too worried about him either. Again, it's just, yeah, he that last game he threw, it was, you were just seeing stuff like the Guardians do. They don't beat you by the home run, right? They don't. They're a team that, like, I felt like I saw it all weekend. It was one of those things where base hit, steal second, base hit, 1-0. And it was, it almost seems like they did it all weekend to the Blue Jays. They don't really have the big superpower guys. Yeah, Jose Ramirez, Josh Naylor can hit the ball out of the ballpark, but a lot of the times it's just like they're just going to put the ball in play and make things happen. And I feel like that's what the Jays started doing yesterday in that seventh inning with Santiago Espinal. Again, a guy that, when the Jays were going good, Drew, he was a guy at the bottom of the lineup. He was a catalyst. He's a guy that just gets on base. And I was a little puzzled, though. Brandon Hyde has done a lot of things. I was a little puzzled that he brought in a lefty to obviously face Tapia, knowing damn well that Schneider had George Springer in the dugout. And to me, George Springer, who's a guy that I wanted to talk about, George Springer is about as clutch as they come. And I feel like he lives for that moment, lives for that situation. And you saw the kind of spark plug that he can bring into the lineup, and just his presence alone, just, you know, the emotion of it. It was all over social media, obviously, him sliding into home plate and screaming and yelling, and as he should be. Again, it's one of those things where I know his elbow's messed up, but godly, man, I don't want to see him take another day off. Like, at this point, I just don't. Like, whether it's DH, whether it's center field, something, like, that guy needs to be in the lineup every single day.
He makes a difference in the lineup because he's a good hitter. Full stop. Like, we don't have to get any more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. Having a good hitter in the lineup compared to Ramel Tapia, who can be effective in the right situation, compared to Jackie Bradley Jr., compared to Kevin Biggio. Like, Springer is a better hitter than all those guys. All three of those guys fucking combined aren't as good a hitter as George Springer. More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
I am of the age where I am like sure. Some guys are better in clutch situations. Often it's good hitters. Good hitters are good good hitters in tough situations. But I can't help but notice that, like, it feels like Vlad hasn't delivered in those big situations. And I just really wish that he would. Now, is that true in 2022? In a lot of ways, it's not true. If I'm looking on Fangraphs right now in high leverage situations, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has the highest weighted runs created plus on the team. He walks a ton. He's drawn 23% walk rate. So he's been up 43 times. He's drawn like 10 walks, 11 walks in those situations. But it doesn't feel like that. And I wonder why that is. I guess we're still waiting. We're waiting for like that signature Vlad Jr. walk-off home run, I think, is where we are. Because in my mind, Bo Bichette has been way better in those situations. Bo Bichette is the guy who seems to always come up with big hits and like in those late and close situations. But he's not as effective as Vlad. But I just feel like it's a matter of being able to draw, to produce that big hit in that big moment. And I just feel like I haven't seen it yet. I don't know, but I'm wrong. But that's just how it feels. I don't know. What do you think? Like, is there something that George Springer can teach these other guys about how to be clutch?
I was going to say that at bat yesterday, he was down 0-2. And mm-hmm. what I like about Springer is he got jammed, but he still found a way to get enough of the ball to where, you know, he's able to do a little bit of damage with it. And I think sometimes with the Vladdies of the world, the Bows of the world, it's like they get so caught up in the situation. And it's like Vladdy wants to hit a home run. I mean, every single at bat. But it almost seems like in those situations, obviously you're facing a good reliever, whoever it is, especially if it's in a big situation like that. And he's not going to give in. And I feel like maybe Vladdy's swing gets a little bit longer than it usually does. Because when we see him hit home runs, it's like nice and easy. And it's a hard, you know, he can take you the other way and he can take you dead center or he can pull the ball. And I feel like sometimes the situation, the magnitude of it, like obviously it's intense. So he wants to like make his mark and it hasn't happened yet. But he has had a few walk-off or I believe one walk-off hit this season. I believe it was against
Bautista. Walk-off hit, yes, absolutely, yeah.
And it was an absolute laser because I remember being at the stadium for it. But yeah, I mean, I think it just comes with experience. And I think... George Springer has been in that role for such a long time. I mean, we watched him against the LA Dodgers and obviously, you know, whether he had the signs or not, I still remember game 7 where he came in and off of Yu Darvish. I was at the stadium watching that game and he just came in, set the tone, boom, home run, 1-0, here we go. And it was like, damn, like this guy is for real. Like I think he thrives on those situations and that's why I say he's a guy that needs to be in that lineup from here on out. Like, I don't think they can afford him to be like a Skip, I need a day here. Like, no, man, like, let's go. Like, I need you here. Like, this is crunch time. Again, they don't have the luxury that the Yankees have where they're 10 games up, 11 games up, whatever it is. And they can actually rest him for a couple days and just kind of let him sit back. They don't have that luxury right now. It's let's get through August. Let's get into September. Let's get hot so that we can roll it into October. And again, obviously, I don't know what his pain tolerance is or how bad it is. So obviously, he's the only one that knows that, or the team is the only one that knows that. But man, I mean, his elbow didn't look like it hurt yesterday.
No, it's true. it's really, so I'm looking at the numbers now. I'm using Baseball Reference and I'm looking at, like, if I look at the 2020 Blue Jays late and close situations. So in terms of like overall numbers, Vladdy's number one. He's got a 950 OPS, sorry, number two behind Gavin Biggio. Gavin Biggio's got a 1,000 OPS in 24 late and close plate appearances. Bo Bichette's OPS is like 669, which is even below what he is for the season. But Bo's got 5 home runs. So those are the things that we remember, right? Those are things that stick out in your mind. Late and close home runs, awesome. But we don't remember as much the fact that he's, you know, got 14 hits in 74 at-bats. Or Vladdy's got 20 hits and he's got 12 walks in 67 plate appearances. So like his numbers are really good, but then the ball doesn't go over the fence and it makes it easy to remember. You remember those ones. You remember the walk-off, remember the game tying home run. So it's important, I think, every so often to like check ourselves and remember that. Also, George Springer's numbers in late and close situations this year are terrible, which is super weird.
Really? But, well, you're right. You're right. We remember the big ones, right? You remember mm-hmm. like the mm-hmm. the big hits. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just the back end of bullpens nowadays are not easy to hit.
No, it's true. But all that said, I think, as you said, I would – Does that, because George Springer's got terrible numbers in late and close situations this year, does that mean that I don't want to see George Springer come up in those situations? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Do I want Bo come? Do I want George Springer coming up? I do. Do I want Bo coming up? I do, because mm-hmm. I've seen those guys deliver. You know that George Springer, who is such a has such a good approach and is not going to change it, and has just had such success in those moments where, as you said, he's able to fight one off, get jammed, and kind of fight it off for a base hit. We've seen him hit big, you know, big home runs in situations in the past. You want him to come up. Now, do I want Vlad to come up? Of course. Whether or not he's had great success or great visual success at the big leagues, as opposed to when we look back and I'm like, oh man, he sure does get on base a lot in those situations. I love to see that those walks in that situation from Vlad. But I don't want to go that down that
road. Maybe Vladdy's waiting for his signature October moment. You never know.
There we go. He had a signature March moment when he hit that. He had a walk-off home run in Montreal in an exhibition game against St. Louis, which was great, which was the highlight of the 2019 Blue Jays season. But, 2018, actually. That was 2018. Man, that was a long time ago. But yeah, I think that maybe he's waiting for that. Waiting to author a signature moment. And, you know, he's as good a hitter as they've got. He's as good a hitter as there is. I know that his numbers are down this year, but like there are not very many hitters that are better than Vlad. What's going on this year or not. So you can only hope and believe that he's going to author that moment when he gets that opportunity. Maybe this weekend against the Yankees. Clay Holmes has been struggling. Roaldis Chapman's been struggling. Jonathan Loaisiga is my guy, my absolute favorite, has been hurt a lot this year. Maybe this is the weekend that Vlad's able to author a great, not October, this is an August moment, but you won't have October moments if you can't have some big August ones as well.
You are 100% right. And this is where Berrios, his start tonight becomes even bigger. And again, he got paid to be pitching in these games in August. And he has to go out there and set the tone for this team, for this rotation. It's an important series. It's not an easy Yankee team. Frankie Montas, their big acquisition is going to go against him. And what better way to be at Yankee Stadium, 7 o'clock at night, and be able to go in there and just pound them.
Just keep your eyes off the Yankeeology. Don't be when you're out there shagging.
Brandon Morrow. Brandon Morrow. He used to say, don't fall for that propaganda bullshit Yankeeography during batting practice. Do not watch it.
We talked about this before off the air, and it was like my all-time favorite story. I didn't want to put it out there immediately, but this is the time. This is the time to tune it all out. Yeah. Go out there. Yeah. Work. Do damage.
Let me explain it a little bit so for our listeners out there. So during batting practice in New York, they shut the music off, and the screen becomes Yankeeography. And so you get caught up watching it. And I remember Brandon Morrow, Drew loves the story. Brandon Morrow used to always come running out and be like, Ricky, don't be watching that shit. Don't be watching that shit. It's all propaganda. They want you to just feed it into your head so that when you go out there, you shit the bed. Don't be watching any of that. So we'd turn around and we'd start our chat. And I'd always just laugh every time. Every time he'd catch me watching. And he's like, don't watch it. Don't watch it. It's that Yankeeography propaganda. It ain't working on me. So I thought it was always pretty funny. So to the team, if you're listening, any of you are listening, don't watch that shit on the screen.
Brandon Morrow, the single greatest Blue Jay in the history of the franchise. Oh, my God. A really smart dude too, right? Brandon Morrow.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
With the Cal. Like, I remember he was the guy that I remember coming in the clubhouse and he's doing the New York Times crossword at his locker. Like, that, you don't see a lot of that. You don't see a lot of that. Always. Smart dude. We are smart dudes who are going to get out of here now while the getting is good. Having told my favorite story of all the times that Ricky and I have chatted off on and off the air, we're having a good time. Blue Jays, Yankees. Exciting. Anything else to think about? Anything on your mind? The one thing I keep thinking before we go out of here, and I'd love to know what you think, is the new Lourdes Gurriel Jr. I think it's amazing. Everybody loves a home run. I love a home run as much as anybody. Lourdes Gurriel has 5 home runs this year. I can't think of a change for the better than him becoming this like line drive singles hitter. While it does give us the opportunity to have to watch Lourdes Gurriel run, which is always a bit of a bargain, a bit of a gamble. I just think he's just become such a, like, it's such a nice counterpoint. He and like, he's very, almost like Alejandro Kirk now, almost mm-hmm. like bookends. And then you've got Vlad, because then you can have your, you've got Matt Chapman, you've got Teoscar Hernandez, you've got Bo Bichette, who are very similar hitters in a lot of ways. But to have a second kind of guy who can clear those bags, who can keep the line going, I really, really think it's just been a huge addition and a really pleasant surprise and evolution of a hitter at the big league level. Really fun to watch.
Dude, you're right, man. He's turned into an awesome hitter. And I think he understands his game now. And I love when pitchers try and pitch him away and he just hits a line drive to right field. It's almost like mm-hmm. become his signature hit right now. And again, yeah, obviously you want to see numbers up and we want to see home runs, but he's probably not that type of hitter.
And, his numbers and, are and, up. That's the other thing, right? His numbers are up because okay. he doesn't ever yeah. get fucking out.
Yeah, and that's okay. Like, hey, if you're going to guarantee me, or not guarantee me, but if more often than not, you're going to be on base for my big boppers, I'm all for it. And he's been doing just that. And the cool thing about it too, Drew, that doesn't get talked about enough is that he's been at the leadoff spot. He's been at the three spot. He's been at the fifth spot. He's been at the seventh spot. He's like been all over that lineup. Up and down, and you just see him continue to be just a consistent guy that he's been this season, and wherever they put him, he's gonna deliver, and that's pretty awesome to watch, and credit to him.
So we haven't talked a lot about Matt Chapman. Matt Chapman hit leadoff. He's in a bit of a slump. He's been striking out a lot. I mean, just sort of trying some stuff. It worked, and that the team won. I really like, especially if, I mean, George Springer, as we've just discussed, is invaluable in that lineup. You can't take him out. But if you go Springer 1, Vlad 2, I really like the idea of Gurriel 3, because you got two good, really good base runners, one who's, you know, good and fast, one who's good and Vlad. And then you've got Gurriel, who can just keep that line moving, drive those guys in because they do get on base so much. I almost like the idea of having Teoscar 4th and then Kirk 5th. So it's just really a really exciting revelation, a really, really cool development. And I think it can only make the team harder to face in those late and close situations. As exactly as you said, he is exactly what the team needs if they want to go make a deep run and make themselves hard to face, make it a tough out there in the late innings.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I feel like Schneider's going to continue to play around with this lineup and see where he can find guys to be consistent at and comfortable at. And it almost seems like he's doing it. He's like shifted the lineup so many times. But again, I mean, when you have this much depth in that lineup, it makes it fun. I feel like as a manager, you're like, okay, let's find the roles for these guys. Let's see where they get comfortable at, where they can get hot at. Yeah, I mean, if Springer can set the tone at the top of the lineup, I think the rest of the lineup speaks for itself. And if Santiago Espinal can get on base for the bottom part of the lineup, then it makes it even that much better, because we know what the middle guys can do. We know what Kirk can do. We know what Vladdy can do. We know what Teoscar can do. So, again, it'll be fun. Another a fun series, them versus the Yankees, and some good pitching matchups that I'm looking forward to. So, let's go. I mean, this is go time. This is time. Like we've been taught since last week, Drew, we said it, right? I mean, when August hit, this is their playoff time and it starts now. And if they fall behind, and they can be on the outside looking in at any point right now, but they've put themselves in this position. So now it's, hey, let's go out there. Let's kick some ass.
Exactly. Exactly that. Exciting time. Fun August series. Lots to gain. Lots to do. We're going to run. We got to get out of here. His name is Ricky Romero. My name is Drew Fairservice. We will be back with more Spin Rate next week, hopefully talking about a very exciting and interesting and productive series for the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll talk to you next time on the very next episode of Spin Rate.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.